VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 539, recorded on May
39th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 372nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and the gaming flashback.
Yeah, so we recorded something last week, but two things. One, the sound on my end was absolutely horrible, and whatever you guys recorded wouldn't have helped. And B, it was also kind of boring. So I thought, why waste other people's time with boring shit? And it was just, which is a shame because the one interesting thing we really couldn't talk much about, and that was the new augmented reality Minecraft game. Right. Basically, you know, you're just building stuff in virtual reality, or at least, you know, you're building stuff in the real world, but in augmented reality.
Right.
Which looks interesting, which will be our gaming flashback. But before we talk about that, we have to talk about what we've been playing, and I'll go first. I've started playing Resident Evil 2. And I didn't realize that ammo was so scarce in the game.
Oh, yeah.
And the one thing that irritates the hell out of me are the knives just break way too early. That's unrealistic. I don't care how many people I'm stabbing. Knives are not going to – especially combat knives. I mean, if you have a cheap, you know, steak knife – you know, which is bolted on. Yeah, that might, but a combat knife? No. Imagine if Bowie knives just went to pieces like that after stabbing someone five or six times. No.
Now you see why people didn't like that mechanic in Breath of the Wild.
Well, they didn't like it in System Shock 2. I mean, weapon degradation, you know, it's just, unless you have something that you know, something that balances it out, and Resident Evil 2 does not balance it out. I haven't met Mr. X yet, so on the other hand, you know, I'm really liking the exploration, and it seems like this is what I like a lot more games to do. Instead of being in a huge friggin' open world, how about have a small world that you really get familiar with? You know, instead of having to explore all that. No. Just a place that you're really familiar with, that you have to go back and forth through. And it's small, so it's not tedious. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm pretty sure, TJ, that you got to learn the layout of that police station really well. Yes? TJ?
Yeah, absolutely. I was messing with my mute button because I'm an idiot. But, but I went through that. I went through that game four times altogether, and it's interesting how much it changed from the original, but also sort of stayed the same. Like the layout is something I remember, but there are little things about it that were like, "What the hell is this?" And I enjoyed that because, like, of course, I don't want to play the exact same game as I played decades ago, but it was an interesting romp to see like the different things that they messed with when they rebuilt that police station.
I know from watching Resident Evil 4 videos to combine those herbs. I've only found a red herb and a green herb. I haven't found the blue herbs yet. I guess it's later in the game.
I think there are a few RPGs that focus on a small area of a world, like Suikoden. You play like in one part of the world and you have some cities there and you get to know it, and then the next game you go to a different part of the world, and as each successive game adds to that world, you just get this massive world that you're very familiar with what happened in those regions. So I think you start to really care about that world.
I just remember playing Ultima 3 and Ultima 4, which basically had the same map. And after like a year, I knew the entire continent of Britannia like the back of my hand. But I mean a very small location, you know, like you only have one building. That's it. I mean, I think you leave that building eventually. You have to go through the underground passage. But still, you know, like you have to learn that one building for the entire thing, and that's how the game is. By the way, I'm playing as Leon. Obviously, after that, I will see what it's like to play as Claire. Other than that, nothing else really. I'm still playing XCOM 2 on the lowest difficulty because I'm just enjoying the story, you know, and I'm enjoying my 95% shots hitting on a consistent basis.
Yeah. What do you think of, like, the headshot systems? Like, there are a lot of people that
I mean, there's an awful lot of headshots you have to make on these zombies, and even that doesn't work if they fall down, which is why I'd like to have the knife, so that when they're on the ground, I can do what you do in Resident Evil 4 and just slash at the body on the ground until it goes, eh, and dies. I can't hear you, TJ.
Would you like me to save you some ammo and or some time?
Can you say that again and be louder?
I can't, like, get any closer to my mic. It's literally in my mouth.
Okay.
Headshots don't matter, except for the shotgun.
Oh, okay.
So, people actually did some testing on this, and what they discovered is that headshots do make, like, a flashy effect in terms of, like, the head exploding sometimes, and they will, like, cause some extra stagger. But in terms of damage, every bullet from, like, a handgun or a machine gun or the Magnum do the same amount of damage. The only gun that matters when you hit them in the head is the shotgun, because it was always built that way in Resident Evil, where, like, if you pointed the shotgun gun upwards towards a zombie's head, it would blow their head clean off.
Well, at least at least their heads explode in Resident Evil 4, except for the ones that have a little thingy coming out of their head, you know, the tentacle monster.
That is to say, like, if they're wiggling their head around too much and you don't want to waste the ammo, just go for the body shot. It does the same amount of damage.
Maybe I'll just hit him in the groin. Maybe that'll hurt.
And that has been TJ's pro tips for RE2.
Right. Well, how about you, TJ? What have you been playing?
Nothing in particular. Well, actually, Blaze Blue took an update recently, so I've been re-exploring new characters in that game and trying out new things. One of my characters in the game took a huge debuff, is just harder to use than ever before, because they took some tools away from him. And then my other character just, like, took a whole bunch of, they gave him a bunch of new tricks that make him stronger. And so I'm kind of in a situation where my team is, like, both good and bad, and I might need to figure out how to change it up. But it's interesting, too, because I just watched a tournament for Blaze Blue Crosstag Battle at this last weekend. It was Combo Breaker up in Chicago. And the top eight players were interesting. There were, like, I didn't see really any of the teams that I usually see land in the top spots. Like, the characters that people were using on the regular before the patch are not as good as they used to be, with the exception of a handful. And so, like, the landscape has changed, and I think that's awesome. I think it's awesome to see Blaze Blue Crosstag Battle evolving and people having to change their game plans to sort of stay ahead of the curve.
By the way, I forgot to mention, Scott, I stopped playing Swag and Sorcery, and here's the thing. It's kind of grindy
after a while. Yes, I've heard that. It's very grindy. But I think that's one of the complaints that people feel about this game publisher game developer, is that they make a game like Graveyard Keeper and this one, and it's very grindy, but it feels like you're not really progressing enough. It's like you're progressing, but to what, you know? And then they just don't feel like it's really going anywhere.
I don't know. Punch Club felt like it was going somewhere. I mean, no. Well, Swag and Sorcery, you know where you're going. It's just it takes you a while to get there.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, this might be the sort of the game that people might enjoy grindy, having it grind a bit. We'll see. There is a bit of micromanagement. And you start finding ways to get, you know, like, you learn very quickly how to send two parties out, and this you're rushing to get the third, and you can see how the game progresses. And when you see how the game progresses, at that point, you're either in, all in, or you just stop.
Yeah.
I mean, the look of the game is great, and I really enjoy you know, playing it when I do, but it's the sort of game in which I have to be in the mood for it. So.
Yeah. I don't mind grind. It's just I think I'd rather it be towards a little bit, I guess, to a character like if I'm playing a Final Fantasy or some sort of RPG like that. But even, yeah, I don't know, lately I think I'm a little bit tired of the RPG grinds where you're just trying to level up a character. I'm kind of glad that game...
It's interesting because it's not just that you're leveling up a character, you're just leveling up your crafting. And here's the thing, it's the crafting that's basically grindy. And one of the things you learn very quickly is to crap a bunch of cheap stuff so you can sell it and get the gold. Because you don't get gold by... You're getting a little bit of gold adventuring. Most of your gold is going to come from grinding crap and selling it. And here's the thing, the better your guy is, the more often he'll craft a rare item, you know, which really gets him gold.
That sounds like World of Warcraft. You craft items, sell them, and then you could buy other stuff.
No, I mean, it's less that and more just, you know, shopkeeper stuff. Here's the thing, by the way. I keep hearing good things about Pathfinder Kingmaker, and yeah. I'm just waiting for that sale, you know. For a game that's $30, it's sort of like, eh, it's on the borderline of what I pay for that sort of game.
It is on sale on GOG.
Okay. And, oh, by the way, yeah, I did download GOG Galaxy because I wanted to download one of my games, and it said, use GOG Galaxy. So, yeah, I'm going to download my Master of Magic and do it. So, yeah, GOG Galaxy is now up.
And speaking of which, there's a GOG Galaxy 2.0 that's coming, and
yeah, it's
they
new
say...
consoles.
Yeah, they want to include all your games from all the different consoles and platforms. I'm interested to see if this works at all, because I'm very curious.
Well, I mean, considering what Microsoft is doing, we'll get to that during the news, you know, but Microsoft wants to bring Xbox Live to Switch and wants to bring it to PS4 and wants to bring it to it is going to be coming to cell phones and tablets, you know, to be able to stream the Xbox games. So we're going to see.
I'd like to see if they actually get. I mean, they say consoles, so are they trying to get
all
PlayStation?
Of them. They want all of them.
This will be interesting.
Nintendo
like I said.
Will say yes, please, because Nintendo knows that their online store sucks, and they would like a different online store that knows what they're doing. That's why they're amenable to Xbox Live.
I would love it if they would be like, oh, there's all your Sony games. Here you go. I would love that. I mean, I feel like that's a little. Much, but hey, if they do it, then that's all makes me happy.
Well, here's the thing. We're talking about, we've discussed Switch storage issues for the last 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Imagine Xbox Live as with its streaming service. You don't have to worry about that shit on the Switch. Yeah, it's 50 gigabytes. Who cares? It's going to go through my Switch.
Yeah. That'd be interesting.
TJ, you were about to say something?
No, I don't have any particular opinion on this matter.
Okay. And what have you been playing, Scott?
I played a little bit of Grim Fandango on Steam.
Cool.
I got that. I worked to work. It worked just fine.
Here's the problem. You're not going to notice this because I played the original, and I played the original metric fuckton. I played it like 50 times because it's such a great story. So I am hyper acutely aware of the changes that you would never notice in the game, like sound cues and all that useless shit, which is why I prefer, if I can, to play the original instead of the one on Steam. But yeah.
It's a very interesting concept because I don't know how.
How far
have
you gotten in it? Or which year are you in?
I guess the year I started.
First year, okay. So you haven't left. Yeah. You haven't left the city yet.
I haven't left the city. Okay. I went to the first death poisoning at a
mass
restaurant.
Poisoning, yeah. One thing that I don't know if you did it was keep examining the humans, you know, with the freaked out faces.
I did.
Keep on doing it, and he talks about, you know. I could scare someone to death, but then I'd get busted on a conflict of interest rap. You know, if you look at the hamburger, he says, I can't reap a hamburger. Cows are a whole other bureau, not to mention the lettuce. And then he looks at the milkshake and says, I would love to reap this milkshake, but of course you have Bruno Martinez. Nice bathrobe.
It was a very surreal scene. They look like they're a Picasso painting, and they do this like shocked face if you touch them or look at them.
More like newspaper cutouts.
Yeah.
From magazines.
And it was very
that's
bizarre.
Point, though. That's the land of the living.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to get to know all these characters. Like Bruno Martinez. Just nice bathrobe.
Well,
spoiler alert, you're not going to see him again until year four. And it's hilarious. That's the only thing I'm going to say.
Okay.
He's such a minor character. Have you met Chowchilla Charlie yet? No, you haven't. That's year two. I mean, when you get to year two, most of the game is in year two, which is taking place in Rubikava. That's where you meet a lot of characters.
Okay.
And there's no spoilers there. It's just mentioning, But actually, there's – I did do a minor spoiler because when you end that first year, you think, oh, wait, that's it? The game's over? It sort of like makes you think, yeah, the game's over. No. The game has just begun. And the way it transitions from year to year is just great.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. You've obviously met Glottis, right?
Yeah.
Glottis will be with you the entire game. He's hilarious.
Glottis is one of my favorite characters in the whole game, I think.
He's a gigantic orange man-child.
Yeah.
He is literally a speed demon. You know, if he doesn't have any velocity, after a while he'll die. That's
I did like what the skeleton guy said. He was like, "Oh, you're not too big. These cars are too small. Yeah. Make the car bigger." And that was a nice little thing.
Damn compact cars! I'm not too big. They're too small. he really gets attached to the bone wagon. some of the puzzles are going to be extremely esoteric, especially when you're in the forest when dealing with a wheelbarrow. I won't give it away, but the first time I played Grim Fandango, I actually solved it by accident.
Yeah, I did that with the puzzle where you're supposed to figure out how to get the boss's signature
that's easy. I figured that out.
Yeah, it was.
Right away.
But
I
solved it like.
You gotta press that.
Yeah. But I solved it backwards. I found the location, did the recording, then went back, and then got the thing that I need to get signed. And it was kind of funny that sometimes I do things like that.
That's one of the things. In year four, there's gonna be four major tasks, and you can do them in any order you want. And that was you might be able to find it. If you can find it, download it. The Grim Fandango design document, which goes through all the stuff they discussed on how to build the game. One of my favorites is one note by Tim Schafer is regarding skeleton sex. Don't ask, don't tell. I'll be interested to see what you think. I absolutely love the ending, and the final line of the entire thing is the hidden Aesop that just smacks you in the face, and you say, oh, that's what this is all about, you know? I won't even hint at what the Aesop is, but when you hit it, it's like you'll be very pleased at the ending, like any good potboiler, because the first part of the game is Glengarry Glen Ross. The second part of the game is more of Casablanca when he's running the nightclub. And the third and fourth, I'm not even going to hint at what it is. So I'm just saying, you're in for quite a ride with Grim Fandango. I just wish they had an option to play it as it originally was. Because there's a poem that's a title drop in which the camera rotates around a character. And you learn very quickly, these models are not meant to be seen in certain angles. you know.
The PS4 edition of the HD remake had a button where you could change it back to the original
settings.
Yeah,
but I don't think it changed it back to the original layout, and that's the problem I have.
Ah.
So, I mean, I noticed that they restored the Bruno tinkle, that little tinkling sound when he's released from the thing, which becomes a brick joke in year four. I'm glad they restored it, because without that angelic tinkling, like, oh, you know, that ding, oh, you know, that's sort of little thing. It's sort of like, yeah, he needed that because he's so much the opposite of what that sound is. Yeah. Aside from Psychonauts, Tim Schafer has never made a game this good. And even Psychonauts, I don't think, is quite on the level of Grim Fandango. Grim Fandango, to me, is the best adventure game ever made. Period. End of story. But that's just me. I was like one of five or six people who actually bought Grim Fandango. And I was also three or four people who actually bought Leisure Suit Larry and the Land of the Lounge Lizards when it was first released and actually bought it and didn't pirate it. I gotta tell what's his face, the developer, hey, guess what? I actually bought that game. Because here's the thing. They estimate they sold, I think it was 20,000 copies or something like that, some ridiculously small amount of copies of Leisure Suit Larry, but they sold 20 times as many hint guides.
Mm-hmm.
Which sort of tells you, yeah, you didn't pay for this game, you just want the hints. Anyway,
for those who don't know, Leisure Suit Larry had age protection in the form of.
Oh yeah, I usually just goofed it off and said I was 103 years old, and he asked me trivia about the Teapot Dome scandal.
Yeah, it had this pretty esoteric trivia that it would the questions would be based upon like what age you said you were, and some of them were just outright absurd, and then like some of them were like really of the time stuff that like not even people that were from that time might know sometimes. I don't know. But the hint guide had all of the answers, so of course people needed the hint guide, because that's how you broke the software protection.
And the new Leisure Suit Larry still has that as well. You put in your age and it'll ask you about friends.
Yeah, I mean, but that's just as a goof for just maintaining the, you know, what people remember about the game.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, Grim Fandango bombed upon release. And I remember reading the PC Gamer preview and I said, yeah, I want that. And no one, you know, and I didn't even know who the fuck Tim Schafer was. I think I had played Full Throttle and said, oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember that game. I enjoyed that game. I never played Day of the Tentacle. I never played Maniac Mansion. I never played any of the old Scum games except for one. I played the Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis. But other than that,
I love that game.
I never finished Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis. Oh, no, I didn't play that. No, I played Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Played that one as well.
Yeah.
I played a lot of the Scum games and the Sierra games, but I played Day of Tentacle, Maniac Mansion, the Monkey Island games.
Yeah, my first adventure with LucasArts was Full Throttle.
Oh, yeah, that too. Full Throttle.
Yeah,
really
Full Throttle Remastered is out. Actually, I have it. I own it. I have it. They gave it to me for free, and I should really check it out at some point. I have it on GOG when they released it on GOG for free. So I'm going to have to play that at some point, too. Again, with all the Star Wars references, and now that when you play it, you realize, hey, wait a minute, all these actors are from Batman the Animated Series. Kevin Conroy, Mark Hamill, Kath Susie, all of them. So, anyways, we're going to move on to Gaming Flashback, and go ahead, Scott.
Okay. This Gaming Flashback is Minecraft. Minecraft is a sandbox video game created by Swedish game developer Marcus Persson and released by Mojang in 2011. The game allows players to build with a variety of different blocks in a 3D procedural generated world, requiring creativity from players. Other activities in the game include exploration, resource gathering, crafting, and combat.
By the way, now we have this 10-year rule, and even though it was released by Mojang in 2011, it was actually released in what we now call early access in 2009. Everybody alpha and beta tested the game for Mojang for all that time. It was officially given the 1.0 release in 2011, but people started playing it in 2009.
and multiple gameplay modes are available. These include survival mode, in which the player must acquire resources to build the world and maintain health, creative mode, where players have unlimited resources to build with and ability to fly, adventure mode, where players can play custom maps created by other players with certain restrictions, and spectator mode, where players can freely move throughout a world without being affected by gravity and collisions, or without being allowed to destroy or build anything. There's also hardcore mode, which is similar to survival mode, but the player is given only one life, and the game difficulty is locked on hard. If the player dies on hardcore, the player does not respawn, and the world is locked to spectator mode as of 1.9. The Java edition of the game allows players to create mods with new gameplay mechanics, items, textures, and assets. You can also change sounds, and it's fully customizable. Minecraft received a critical acclaim and won numerous awards and accolades. Social media parodies, adaptations, merchandise, and the Minecon convention played large roles in popularizing the game. There was also, now there's Minecraft Pocket Edition, Minecraft on Xbox, Minecraft Educational Edition, Minecraft Story Mode, which is also on Netflix. It's huge, yeah. It has also been used in educational environments, Minecraft Education Edition, especially in the realm of computing systems, as virtual computers and hardware devices have been built in it.
Yeah, including a cell phone. I remember built a working cell phone in the middle of the game.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can do with Redstone. By May 2019, over 176 million copies have been sold across all platforms, making it the best-selling video game of all time. In September 2014, Microsoft announced a deal to buy Mojang and the Minecraft intellectual property for $2.5 billion, with the acquisition completed 2 months later. A spin-off game titled Minecraft Story Mode has also been released. By mid-2018, the game had around 91 million active players monthly.
Yeah, and just a hint, Microsoft made that $2.5 billion many times over since.
Oh, yeah, they made it back that year. I think by Christmas they had the money back already.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And there are two things to note about Minecraft. One, there were a lot – it restarted the idea, you know what? Graphics aren't necessary to make people want to play a game. Because for those of you who don't know, Minecraft is just a bunch of blocks. And not, you know, the textures are just, you know, heavily pixelated.
I like what one of my friends have called it. It's basically Legos on the computer, where you play all blocks you want, and you don't have to worry about the cleanup or stepping on painful blocks.
What's funny is Minecraft emulated Lego, and then Lego emulated Minecraft.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't feel like Lego did as well.
Lego did well with Traveler's Tales, and I think that's where they went for, and it was too late. And then Minecraft started saying, "Oh wait a minute, we should be doing this other thing." But they were so locked in to the Traveler's Tales style of doing Lego, you know, that it was hard to quit, because the Lego MMO is basically just, you know, Traveler's Tales but in an open world. The other thing is that I think Minecraft, over everything else, affected Microsoft's business strategy. Because one thing is that when Microsoft bought Minecraft, they did not stop putting it for other consoles. It still went for the PS3, PS4, it still went for the Switch, it still went for, you know, every single platform imaginable. Microsoft just said, yeah, we're not going to end that. And then it made, you know what? We can make more money with software across a bunch of platforms whilst maintaining our own platform and make a lot more money, which is why all of a sudden you have all this Microsoft wanting to be your online service on the Switch, on everything else, you know. Microsoft invariably led to a Game Pass, because Minecraft was a big part of the Game Pass when it first started 2 years ago, and it made Microsoft say, wait, we're making so much more money with Game Pass than we are. And that's when they decided, you know what, exclusivity, not that big a deal. It's not that big a deal. We don't care anymore about exclusivity. What we want is everybody buying our shit.
Yeah, more money that way.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, Minecraft is this sandbox game where you can play any kind of mode that you feel like.
Console unto itself, you know. I think it's its own platform.
Yeah. Yeah, in a way it is, because you have all these different maps that can be all sorts of different platforms. There's this map called Diversity where they have a genre map within 16 ones. A lot of, like, dropper map where you drop through a pit. And it's kind of like, I guess, Pitfall, where you're falling down and you're trying not to die. They have parkour where you're climbing up a something. Then they'll have a survival map, and then they'll have an adventure map, then they'll have a boss map, and then a trivia, and then a puzzle map. And there's just all sorts of things that you can do in Minecraft, you know.
What happened was that Microsoft saw Minecraft first, and they said, we're going to make our own Minecraft, and that's how Project Spark happened. And Project Spark had all the, it had all the abilities of Minecraft, you know, to create your own world. It was more of a game creation sort of thing, but it still borrowed heavily from Minecraft. And then they bought Minecraft, so we don't need Project Spark anymore, which is a shame. Yeah. I liked Project Spark.
Yeah, it does sound like a shame. And you know, Minecraft even had Battle Royale before it was called Battle Royale. They called it Ultra Hardcore Mode, where you had a shrinking border and last man standing, no regen, and, you know, people played that for a while on Minecraft.
I'm pretty sure a player unknown was playing that and said, hey, wait a minute, this is a good idea.
Yeah.
Talk about the grand scheme of things that people have put together in Minecraft, but there's also just like the items that they've put together via like the source code and stuff. I've seen somebody program make a little computer in Minecraft and then program it to be able to run DOS and then program that DOS program to run Doom. So it was a little computer made in Minecraft running Doom in Minecraft, which is just hilariously good.
But you know what? Let's even ignore the meta stuff. Talk about the in-game stuff. I mean, a lot of the stuff is basic science. Like, you have to craft stuff, and the crafting is simplified, but it also makes sense, you know? And if you're stupid enough to make a gold sword, guess what? You just wasted something, because gold is soft and malleable. It doesn't make a good sword.
I think Redstone, the programming circuitry in Redstone, it has a lot of real world applications to electronics and electricity and circuitry. In my company, we have like repeaters for continuing a signal, and so you have that in Minecraft. You have all these logic gate systems that I barely understand.
I'm pretty sure you've seen people where they build a conveyor belt, which is carrying dirt, which is carrying it to this, which transforms it into this, and then it goes through this heater, and it heats it up and all that stuff. You know, so you have actual manufacturing in the game. As a matter of fact, Fortress Craft started out as a regular Minecraft clone. And oh, by the way, it was also it got a million purchases for 99 cents on the Xbox Live Indie Store. So even before, even when Minecraft finally arrived in the Xbox, Fortress Craft was just selling because people love the concept. You know, if you do a concept well, people are going to do it. But the thing is that Fortress Craft, when it became a PC game, they decided to make it into a manufacturing game, which took the Minecraft thing but went whole hog on manufacturing. So you had all these conveyor belts and all this processing stuff, you know, processing metals and stuff like that. I mean, Minecraft is a place where you can make the world that you want. I mean, I remember seeing people making a life-size version of the Starship Enterprise.
Yes, I saw that too. That was an amazing build.
So, I mean, here's the thing. Now, let's talk about Minecon. One thing that really stresses what kind of game Minecraft is. Minecon had the most kids under the age of 12 of any video game convention I've ever seen. That is a serious, quote unquote, serious convention, you know? So yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what these kids are going to be like in 10 years from now.
Yeah, I've already seen kind of stuff like that where people are like, oh, I played this when I was a kid, and I guess they've age to teenagerhood or something, and now it's just like this been this big part of their life.
I mean, I wonder how many of these kids are, say, going to go to robotics, you know, because Minecraft is a good tutorial on how to do, you know, how to do logical thinking for robots, you know?
Yeah, that could be, yeah.
So anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Go ahead, TJ. You're still on mute, TJ.
Apologies.
Okay.
Microsoft explains Xbox Game Pass for PC selling games on Steam. Microsoft has announced the implementation of Xbox Game Pass for Windows 10 games, bringing the popular program from the Xbox One console to PC gamers, while also launching 20-plus games on Steam in the name of giving players more choice. For those who not in the know, the Xbox Game Pass launched on Xbox One 2 years ago and was wildly popular, a Netflix-like service for the system where players could play any number of games from a select library for $5 a month or $30 a year.
No, that's wrong. It's,
Oh.
Okay, try it again.
Okay. For those not in the know, the Xbox Game Pass launched on the Xbox One 2 years ago and was wildly popular, a Netflix-like service for the system where players could play any number of games from a select library for $9.99 a month. Despite the name, the Xbox Game Pass for Windows 10 will be a strictly PC affair, giving players access to a large library. Microsoft promises there are over 75 developers and publishers trying to bring PC content to the service, and will ensure the library remains curated and full of great PC titles across a variety of genres, with new games added every month. However, Microsoft is also bringing over 20 Xbox Game Studio titles to Steam, Windows 10's store's rival service, including Gears of War 5, and all Age of Empires games, including 1, 2, and 3 Definitive Editions, in addition to the already announced Steam launch of Halo, the Master Chief Collection. The presser also spoke to developers about Microsoft's support of Win32 for Windows 10 games. The API is a favorite of studios, especially indie devs. The publisher promises, "We are excited to share that we will be enabling full support for native Win32 games to the Microsoft Store on Windows."
So yeah, I mean, it's a little more expensive than EA's Game Pass, which is $5 a month or $30 for an entire year. But like I said, it's just Microsoft deciding, you know what, software is where it's at, you know. And exclusivity just means we don't get to sell for as many people as possible.
That's true. It makes sense. And I hope that they bring Blue Dragon to PC, then I can get that and play it.
That's an Xbox 360 game. Also, Microsoft doesn't own it.
Oh, they don't?
Oh, no, they do own it. I'm sorry. Wait, do they? I remember they released it for who was the developer of Blue Dragon anyway? I know it was someone famous.
Was that not Square Enix?
It was Microsoft Game Studios. That was Blue Dragon, but it was done by Sakaguchi, who belonged to Square Enix.
Oh.
I think Bandai Namco did the DS version. So yeah.
Mistwalker and Artoon? I don't know who those are. I've never heard of them before.
Mistwalker? You don't know who the fuck Mistwalker is?
Who's Mistwalker?
Mistwalker's a major JRPG developer. Are you kidding me? They did Lost Odyssey. They did The Last Story.
Yeah, none of these were games that I played because they were on Xbox 360 before I had an Xbox 360.
Okay.
That's the only reason I missed them. It's not that I didn't want to play them. It's that I just didn't have the hardware to play them at the time. I would love to see Blue Dragon actually re-released as like an HD edition, the way they're doing with like the Final Fantasy games.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
I mean, the big thing about it was that it was being written by Akira Toriyama, written by Hironobu Sakaguchi, and composed by Nobuo Uematsu. You know, the big three. I mean, here's the thing. Blue Dragon is about as it's the most JRPG-ish game that you're ever going to play. It is so – it is almost a parody of a JRPG. It is that much of a JRPG game, which unfortunately also means grinding, but, you know. But, yeah, it's the unofficial Final Fantasy game.
Yeah. But, it really does, like, have all the look of, like, it makes me think a lot of, like, a Dragon Quest game. Yeah. I mean, it was with Akira Toriyama, so of course it looks like a Dragon Quest game, but...
But here's the thing, it's also, Microsoft told these guys, here, do whatever you want. So this is the game they always wanted to make, you know? It's like, you know, Microsoft wants to make a JRPG, and they just tell the people who are best at JRPGs, just make the JRPG you always wanted to make. And this is the game they always wanted to make. So, I mean, for those who don't know, Blue Dragon revolves around the fact that your characters have shadows that do their special attacks, you know? That basically give them their superpowers. And the story is very multifaceted. I mean, the story goes in directions you don't expect it to because it's so... Until midway through the game, it's sort of like your generic JRPG. And then there's a twist. And it's sort of like... I mean, the main trait of the main character is they'll never, ever, ever, ever give up. As a matter of fact, in the game, they're the only character that cannot flee from a battle. So when a certain thing happens, through sheer force of will and I will never give up, he's able to be able to stay in the fight, basically, be able to stay in the story. And all the things that you're doing, you thought were for one thing or for another. I hate having to do spoilers. You know, just play the game and find out.
Yeah.
So anyways, yeah. And I'm curious to see. I skipped Gears of War 3 and 4 and Judgment, you know. And from what I understand, Gears of War 4 was not very popular. So it'll be interesting to see how Gears of War 5 does now with a much, much bigger audience.
Yeah, Gears of War 3 was good. I never played Gears of War 4, although people told me, yeah, it's okay.
Mainly because it's supposed to star Marcus Fenix's son, and then the game says, fuck it, here's Marcus Fenix anyway. Here's old Marcus Fenix. You know, you thought you were going to play his son, but nah, fuck it. We know you don't really like Marcus Fenix's son. We're just going to let you play as Marcus Fenix. John DiMaggio needs a paycheck, damn it. And we don't have Carlos Farrow anymore voicing Dominic.
You can't just like ride. I mean, you can't just like ride on Ghost Dom for 40 hours.
Anyways,
spoiler.
We're gonna move on to the next item. The Avengers game being revealed at E3 2019. This comes to us from PC Gamer. By the way, just so you know, TJ will be at E3.
I will.
There's some interesting things that are coming out. Here's the thing. I may not be going, but I get all the emails, and Microsoft is saying, guess what? We're going to have something special at E3. We're going to talk about the Xbox Game Pass, which sort of tells me that they're going to have one gets you 10 that Microsoft will announce a partnership with Nintendo to bring Xbox Live to the Switch. I think that's going to be their big reveal at the conference.
That's a good guess.
You know, I just hope, you know, well, no, I mean, the thing that's annoying about E3 is that you have to walk everywhere now. You want to go check out Microsoft stuff? Yeah, you got to go to LA Live. You have to leave the show floor, leave the building, walk all the way over to LA Live and get in line again. Oh, well, anyways, Square Enix has confirmed that the worldwide reveal of its Avengers game is happening at E3 2019. It was just revealed via the game's official Twitter account, where it's confirmed that you'll be able to see the reveal during Square Enix's live event at E3, which starts at 6 p.m. Pacific time on June 10th. What's seemingly the name of the game is also mentioned, Marvel's Avengers. In case you're worried that the account might be fake, writer and creative director Sean Eck... Jesus Christ... Escaig also shared the news on his Twitter feed, and a lot of folks know that Square Enix just started following it. Square Enix's partnership with Marvel was announced back in January 2017 and was explained as being a quote-unquote multi-year, multi-game. Crystal Dynamics is developing the game along with Eidos Montreal. Jeff Keighley would be hosting the game at E3's Coliseum the following day. Oh, Jesus Christ. You know, another location.
Yeah.
This is why, if I'm not living in L.A., maybe it's just best I just stay home.
I'm going to have to Uber all over L.A.
Oh, I mean, oh, here's the thing. At least L.A. Live is like a couple of – is like a 10-minute walk away from the it's just across the street, really. But the Coliseum – anyways, are you interested in an Avengers game? I mean, Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, has it come out yet, or has it just been announced?
Nope, it hasn't come out. Oh. And that's kind of what I keep thinking about whenever I see this. Like, yeah, I know about the Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, and they're like, no, it's an Avengers game. And it's like, why? What? Okay.
Well, here's the thing. Marvel Ultimate Alliance is more of a Diablo-esque game. So you have to think that maybe this Avengers game, especially if it's being made by Square Enix, imagine if it's a turn-based RPG.
The absolute only way I would possibly even come close to giving a crap is if it was like City of Heroes, but with Avengers.
Oh, well, that's another thing. Did you see City of Heroes Home? Well, what's the name? It's been relaunched.
Yeah, I did.
In which I definitely have to check it out and recreate my character.
I would love for you to do that, because I want to know if it's as good as it used to be.
Well, I mean, it's as good as the fans remember. I think it's free to play. I'm not sure. I have to check. But yeah, Homebound, I think it's called. City of Heroes Homebound. That's nice to trod the streets of Paragon City again.
Yeah.
So what about you, Scott? Are you interested in an Avengers game by Square Enix?
I'm not sure. If it was an RPG, I think I might. I don't know if it's likely to be a fighting game, so I'm not sure. I'd have to see it.
not another fighting game with Marvel characters.
Yeah, I don't know. It's EA. No, I know it doesn't say that. Sorry, my bad. No, I saw the E3 and I thought EA for some bizarre reason. So, Square Enix, so yeah, they usually make RPGs, so it sounds like it's going to be an RPG, so I probably would be interested to see what they do.
Really neat is if they make it cel-shaded like Ni No Kuni, you know? Instead of having realistic characters, they make it like more of like a cel-shaded cartoon.
I could do that, yeah, because Ni No Kuni did it well.
Crystal Dynamics, never mind. Crystal Dynamics basically is Lara Croft. Oh, well. It's Eidos and Crystal Dynamics, so no, it's not going to be that. I wish it would be. I mean, 13 is coming out again.
Is that the studio?
That's the cel-shaded shooter, 13.
XIII. Okay. Well, I don't know. I mean, they have lots of resources, so they'll pick something. I mean, they did do Dragon's Quest, which was... You know, it had like a softer animation.
Yeah, but that's not the Avengers. I mean, Dragon's Quest has been around for a while and has a specific look to it.
Yeah.
That's not what the Avengers have. We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean,
the Avengers I think they have kind of a sharp look to them usually, so I don't know.
It seems odd because, like I said, this is going to be competing against another Marvel game that's basically all the characters. It's not the Avengers, but it might as well be. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. Super Mario Maker's 2 lack of costumes and online matchmaking with friends upsets fans. This is from Eurogamer. Nintendo's Mario Maker sequel might add a bunch of new things to the Mushroom Kingdom creation station, but a couple of omissions have upset fans. For starters, there's been criticism of the fact that the game does not include the option for online multiplayer with your pals. That is very strange. Online multiplayer is new to Super Mario Maker 2, and footage of it during the recent Nintendo Direct for the game was formally received. Fans assumed, though it was never stated, they would be able to play
online. Hold on, one of you is rubbing your mic against your clothes.
I'm not.
That's someone else then.
I think that's breathing.
Someone is breathing.
Oh, sorry, that might have been me. Like I said, my mic is really close to my mouth. I'm sorry.
Okay, so Okay. For starters, there's been criticism of the fact that the game does not include the option for online multiplayer with your pals. Online multiplayer is new to Super Mario Maker 2, and footage of it during the recent Nintendo Direct for the game was warmly received. Fans assumed, though it was never stated, that they would be able to play online with friends, but this is not the case. At this week's round of preview events for the game, a spokesperson told Nintendo World Report you were limited to online play with randoms to ensure course leaderboards were not dominated by teams working meticulously together. See, you know, that's why we can't have nice shit, you know, because it's like, I would like to play with my friends. I don't want to play with randoms. I want to play with my friends. It's
yeah, and by the way, what's wrong with teams working meticulously together?
I don't get that. So, which, to be honest, sounds like a really fun way to play. Not to me, but... Oh, you mean the teams? Okay, I don't know which one the article means. Fans have asked for an option for friend-only play to not count towards leaderboards. I would accept that. If this is the issue, or for separate leaderboards dedicated to play with friends. That sounds like another good plan. Secondly, fans are upset at the sequel's lack of amiibo support. And with this, the removal of Mystery Mushroom characters, apart from having something else to do with those Nintendo figurines gathering dust on your shelf, the fact they helped unlock extra Sprite characters in-game was actually useful. That does seem like an oversight. Mystery Mushrooms, the other way of getting these characters, are gone completely. Game Explained simply confirmed with Nintendo, so there's no opportunity to play as some of the dozens and dozens of other obscure Nintendo faces available in the Wii U version. These characters were particularly useful when they implemented in theme courses, such as being able to play as a pixelized Samus Aran in Metroid theme level or Pac-Man in a recreation of the game's classic map. It encouraged some great homages to retro games of the past. There's still time, of course, for Nintendo to add these things in later, and Super Mario Maker 2 is certainly not wanting for new content elsewhere, such as its entirely new campaign mode, which sees you rebuilding Princess Peach's castle.
You know, the problem here is they don't have good matchmaking. They don't have a good Xbox Live service with friends and all that stuff. I mean, do they still have to do friend codes?
Yeah, I don't know why they're not implementing the amiibos, because I thought that's been their thing. I mean, I don't know, they introduced it in Animal Crossing, they had it in Breath of the Wild, I'm sure other games have been using them.
DJ, you can talk now, you can start talking instead of breathing.
Yeah, I was... but, you know, it's kind of a shame that they didn't do amiibo support for this, because that was a fun thing with Super Mario Maker 1.
Well, I'd imagine it was a fun thing for everything, since, you know, you want to use those figurines as much as possible.
For sure. Like, I have a whole bunch on my desk, and it's like, this is a fresh new game, and they're just going to sit on my desk collecting dust. That said, I don't know if I care if I can't play Super Mario Maker with people online, because, like, playing co-op at a Mario game is already a difficult experience without lag.
Yeah, but I mean, people can't always come over to do couch co-op. I mean, yeah, you may not like it, but other people may.
I mean, I think of Smash Brothers Ultimate online, and I think, man, that would be nightmarish if I was trying to concentrate really hard on moving between platforms with somebody else. Like, just Nintendo Online right now just doesn't have the infrastructure to handle a platformer.
Yeah, because Little Big Planet would get laggy like that, and I think Sony's internet is maybe a little bit better than Nintendo's, and so if they get laggy, that could be a real pain if somebody makes a jump and then suddenly if they're like rubber band back over some crazy stuff.
Well, here's the thing. You know, it's always a bad scene when a sequel takes away features instead of adding them.
Yeah.
I don't think you play online co-op in the first one.
I mean, well, you're saying, why remove amiibo support? for the first.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I would understand it, even though it's a little bit dickish if they had all new amiibos for the Switch. You had to buy these new amiibo, but they're not even doing that.
Yeah, it really just does seem like a lost opportunity, especially when Smash Ultimate already has like the functionality to do amiibos on the Switch. It's not like something you can't do.
Anyway, so we're going to move on. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Wolfenstein Youngblood to feature ray tracing technology from Shaq News. This weekend during Computex 2019, Bethesda and NVIDIA revealed that Wolfenstein Youngblood will feature ray tracing technology, making it the next AAA title to be added to the list of ray-traced blockbuster franchise. Ray tracing is a new technology that users can take advantage of on NVIDIA's GeForce RTX GPUs. The tech offers real-time effects with adaptive shading and other advanced gaming technologies that will create a more rich and realistic visual experience for players.
Okay, let's take a time out for a moment. Okay, ray tracing is not a new technology, because ray tracing has been since the beginning of time with computer graphics. For those who don't know what ray tracing is, it's basically figuring out how light hits something one light thing at a time. Which is why it used to take like 2 days to create a scene that was ray traced, but it looked beautiful because all the light was acting realistically. So what's new here is that they've managed to make a card so powerful that it can do it in real time in a basic home PC. So what you're getting is a lot of games have to fake lighting, right? I mean, it's still doing lighting, but it's sort of faking it. It's sort of making suppositions and assumptions. Ray tracing is direct light reaction. Just absolute light reaction. This is how it's going to go. This is if a light particle hits this here, if the surface is reflective, if it's absorbed, whatever, you know. So ray tracing is actual lighting, real lighting, not less... You know, less sort of like pixel. Okay, we're going to generally see how it does against this texture. So what they're saying is they're doing ray tracing. This type that used to take 2 days 10 years ago to do. I mean, what they do in CGI for movies like Pixar, that's ray tracing. That's actual ray tracing, which is why these films take so long. And why cheap films look like PS2, you know, cutscenes, because they're not doing that, you know. So we're talking about a really, really advanced technology smushed into a single card that you can run on a PC. Okay. Moving on. Right. Go ahead.
If you're interested in the upcoming Wolfenstein title, then you can actually pick up the Born to Hunt bundle today, which offers a GeForce RTX GPU like the 2080 Ti, 2080, 2070, or 2060 alongside a copy of Wolfenstein Youngblood. Those playing through Wolfenstein Youngblood will find themselves with realistic visuals and cinematic quality cutscenes. This should help to bring the game world to life in a way that wasn't previously possible without the technology. It's great to see the Wolfenstein series continue to make use of the latest technology to bring the beautiful and dangerous world of the series to life. Wolfenstein Youngblood was originally revealed last year, with the release date set to sometime in 2019. A couple of months ago, Bethesda revealed that the upcoming sequel to B.J. Blazkowicz's Adventures would be continuing with the Youngblood's full release on July 26, 2019. Wolfenstein Youngblood is currently set to release on the PC, PS4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. Of course, ray tracing won't be available on every platform, so if you want the most advanced and realistic visuals, you'll probably need to go with the PC and with a capable GPU.
What, you want to be able to do ray tracing on Nintendo Switch?
I know, right? Crazy.
So you're the guy who loves the series, TJ.
I do. I played all the way through Wolfenstein 2. And
was that the old one? No.
That was the new Colossus.
Okay, the most recent was New Colossus, right?
You know, I'm interested. I'm not as interested as I was with the New Colossus, because the New Colossus ended on such a good, on such like a high note that it's like, I kind of want. It's kind of the issue of Leisure Suit Larry, where like you're gonna have to like make things bad again to make these characters have to go through something.
I don't know if it has to be bad again. Just, you know, here's a new threat. Let's deal with it. You know, sort of like, and even though I hate the movies, sort of like ID4 Resurgence, in which things aren't dour. I mean, everything starts off great because we have alien technology, and it's just, oh, the aliens are back. We got to figure out a way to fight them and defeat them. That, you know, it's still upbeat. You know, it's not like, oh yeah, the Nazis have taken over and now everybody's forced to learn German through political re-education.
I think my issue with it is the issue that you had one of the long, 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 long list of issues you had with the new Star Wars movies. If the Empire is dead, then who are the rebels rebelling against this time?
Well, the New Order, of course, who are Nazis. And, you know, it's not even being subtle about them being Nazis. They're actual Nazis, just without the swastika.
Go ahead.
I know, but here's the thing, you know, I mean, it's okay if it's, you know, the good guys are now the ruling body and the bad guys are now the rebels. I mean, that's perfectly acceptable, you know.
I mean, yes, to a degree, yes, it is, because they're Nazis, and why wouldn't you want to stop out the last trace?
Or maybe you know what they don't have in this new Wolfenstein? They don't have Robot Hitler,
mm-hmm.
The original Wolfenstein. So the Youngblood should climax with B.J. Blazkowicz and his son fighting Robot Hitler with his tween mm-hmm. machine guns and floating in a disc. Because Wolfenstein, I think, is at its best when it's the most ridiculous. Look, they're on the moon! Nazis on the moon. That sounds like a Mel Brooks movie.
I'm not saying Youngblood won't be good, and I will play it just because I'm interested. It does look fun. I mean, it's not often that you see a game that just straight a first-person shooter, no less, that sticks strictly to a single-player experience. And good on them, because why? If you know what you're good at, then why muddy it with trying to force multiplayer in there?
Are you interested in seeing YouTube videos of the game with graphics jacked all the way up?
It's like I do want to see what this technology looks like, and I finally think I actually have a, like, with the new laptop I just got, I think I finally have something that can do that.
Really?
So I might see what it looks like.
Okay. Well, it requires a special GeForce, though, apparently. You know, 1080 Ti. I mean, you know, I need to get a new desktop at some point. But here's the thing. If I buy a new desktop, it's not going to have the most cutting-edge graphics. It's going to have graphics good enough to play, you know, games of this ilk. Who knows? If I come into money, you know, maybe I'll spring for a 1080 Ti, which comes with Wolfenstein Youngblood, just to test it out. I mean, but here's the thing. We're getting more realistic, but, you know... You know where the memory would be better served? AI. You know? It's okay to have graphics that are photorealistic, but I want smart AI. You know, I want something that challenges the Turing test rather than challenges, you know, is it real or is it Memorex? You know? Because there's... You know, I've seen tech demos before. I mean, Unreal and Unreal 2 were tech demos. But after, you know, they didn't really have anything else behind them. They just looked really, really pretty. You know? And I want a game that, you know, I want the best available AI. That's why I loved Half-Life. I didn't really like Half-Life 2 that much. Because in Half-Life, the soldiers would try and flank you. They'd flush you out with grenades. You know, they'd actually use tactics. Well, in Half-Life 2, all they were going to run up at you and try and shoot you. And that's our tactics. Even if you're in a place where you can just mow us down one by one by one. No, just Zerg tactics. We want to be in StarCraft. We're the Zerg.
Yeah. I'm interested. Like, I'm interested to see what this stuff looks like. I'm, of course, interested in new technology. I mean...
Well, hey, you know, you're going to be at E3. You know, I'll bet you that they'll have a setup. You know, NVIDIA will have a booth there, and they'll have Wolfenstein Youngblood demo there, showing you how good it can look. So if they do have a booth there, let us know what it looks like.
Take pictures. Give a show, and I'll be sure to post them. Yeah, I'm excited. There's a lot of things I'm doing at E3 that I've already actually nailed down. I'm actually talking to the Alienware folks, which I've been a fan of Alienware for a long time. It's always been my rig of choice.
Yeah, I had a Falcon, and my last name was Falcon. Falcon Northwest, which was eaten up by Alienware. Dell ate up Alienware.
Yeah. Alienware is a company that I've stuck with for a long time, so I'm actually happy to make a connection with those folks finally. But it's going to be fun. There's going to be all sorts of shenanigans. Before we close off, there is one thing that like sort of slipped by our notes that we
talked about. There's a lot of things that we could talk about because there's a lot of stuff that happened. And I said, it seems interesting, but I mean, like Ghostface. He's going to be in Dead by Daylight. I mean, it wasn't exactly a secret, but they finally announced it. They finally announced all the clans, the starting clans for Bloodlines 2. The Malkavians are the last one. You know, and I'm really excited. I'm going to pre-order it. And, you know, it's not even coming out in 2020. It's coming out this year in October.
Well, I kind of wanted to ask, did you guys watch the Death Stranding trailer that came out yesterday?
Oh, yeah, that crap. Oh, yeah.
Oh my god. So harsh.
I have no interest in Death Stranding. I'm sorry, I just don't.
What don't you like about
it? I have as much interest in that as Silent Hills.
Like, not at all?
I can't hear you.
Like, as in you're not interested at all?
Not really.
I am after seeing that trailer yesterday, and for several reasons. And not just the fact that it's finally like Hideo Kojima, Mads Mikkelsen, and Norman Reedus and Guillermo del Toro working on the project that they wanted to work on.
Mm-hmm.
They showed some gameplay, like some actual gameplay finally, and it made me think of like sci-fi Witcher 3. And this was something that like I showed it to my wife and she had a look at it and she came to the same conclusion without me even telling her. And it's interesting. It's interesting.
I just get flashbacks from The Order 1886.
You do?
I just gives you those flashbacks. Sorry, but I don't care that much about it. And I definitely don't care about Hideo Kojima, to tell you the truth. I mean, I just can't wait to see what kind of bad writing is going to be in that game.
That's fair. A lot of people don't. I personally like his stuff.
How much you want to bet Raiden will appear in that game just because Kojima thinks he's ultra cool? Trust me, if he could find a way to sneak Raiden in, he would.
God, have you seen a dumbo? God?
Hmm? Yeah?
Have you seen the Death Stranding trailer?
No, I haven't. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it interests me. I'm sorry.
I mean... You know, the Ghostbusters video game from 2009 is getting a remaster.
Huh.
Even though that game was mediocre. But hey, it has Harold Ramis' voice in it.
Yeah, for some people, that's good enough.
Did I hear correctly that Dan Aykroyd is repping that game? And if so, oh my god.
He's in the game. I don't know about repping it, but you know, he is a strange mama jama. Here's the thing, you know, he believes everything in Ghostbusters. That's not acting. He actually believes all that. He believes in aliens. He believes in ghosts. You know.
He believes in making a delicious vodka, Crystal Skull vodka.
Yeah.
Yes.
He should stick to vodka.
He got Larry King drunk, drinking that vodka.
Dan Aykroyd is an awesome actor that has done some great things, but he is also a bit of a mess.
He's a weirdo, but he's a weirdo in a good way. You know the game that I'm really looking forward to is Conan Unconquered. That really looks good. I haven't played a good RTS in a very long while, and it looks really good.
Yeah. Well, even if I'm alone, I'm super interested in seeing what Death Stranding brings, just because, like, it really does kind of look like good parts of No Man's Sky mixed with The Witcher 3 mixed with sci-fi. I like it.
By the way, I forgot. Last week, Splitgate Arena launched. And it's free to play. I was wondering if you'd checked it out, since you know the developers.
Yes, I played it. It's good. It's really good. Have you played it? You should.
I haven't had a chance to. And the thing is that I'm playing on a laptop, and when I try to play it, it's sort of like, yeah, I got to put all the graphic options down. I'll play it at some point.
If you like Halo and you like Portal, then you have no business not playing Splitgate.
Well, what about that other game that came out that's free to play?
Dauntless?
Yeah.
Dauntless is also good.
And that's on
it's
console.
It's a good time for free to play games.
And Dauntless is on console, so.
Splitgate is coming to console eventually. They just wanted to focus in on the PC version right now, which makes sense to me. They did a very good product, and I can't wait for them to move that out to Xbox One and PS4 as well, because that game deserves every bit of the attention that people are giving it.
It's getting B-minus scores, which is fine. You know, it's an indie AAA game. And the thing with those is that you really have to be patient with them, because when they first come out, no matter how much testing they've done, they're always going to be a little janky, you know? And I've noticed that when those games, if they maintain, because here's the thing, you're going to get fans, right? So as long as you have fans who are playing it, you know, after a year, you'll probably, you know, have, you know, gotten it to a fine sheen, and then you can really make the press. You know, I mean the press as in moving forward. So yeah, I'm pretty sure that the first year is going to be examining all the, you know, the live stuff, checking out the complaints, seeing what they can change, seeing how they can tweak it, you know. I mean, I played it at PAX. I mean, it's fine, you know. It just needs to stand out. Mm-hmm. And it needs to not be like Cliff Bleszinski and just make people upset at you to where there's only 10 concurrent players on your game.
And they're going the right way about it. They're talking to some important people. Like, say what you want about Dr. Disrespect, but when he plays your game, other people will come along with him, and that's the fact of the matter.
I mean, let's just say what it is, though. Splitgate is more of a proof of concept than it is, you know. And basically, it is their resume saying, "Look what we can do. Oh, we released this game. It's getting good, positive reviews, you know, and you know that'll go a long way." I just hope the same thing doesn't happen to them that happened to, oh God, what is their name again? The guys who made Dirty Bomb and Brink and Enemy Territory. Those developers, you know? I should know, because I spoke to those guys a lot at E3. Splash Damage.
Uh-huh.
So I hope what happened, they don't have the same thing that happened to Splash Damage. Because Dirty Bomb was just murdered. Well, it was murdered by Nexon, but also they didn't update it enough, you know. So we'll see. Splitgate is good enough to succeed, but the problem is that even if you're good enough to succeed, you may not succeed. So we'll see.
Yeah. I think they're putting it in front of a lot of people's eyes, though, and people are seeing for themselves. Which is a good thing, because the game is good enough to stand on its own once it's in front of people.
It'll be interesting to see how well Dauntless does, though.
It's doing great. It went from like 3 million players to 4 million players to 6 million players in the course of 2 weeks. So it's on the uptick. Like, I keep getting press releases from the folks over at Phoenix Labs.
I'm pretty sure about, you are. Look how great we're doing. Those kind of email things, like, yeah, we sold 1 million. We have 1 million concurrent players, that sort of thing.
Which is impressive. Like, it's impressive to see that they moved like 2 million players over the course of the console launches. It's no World of Warcraft, but hell. I mean, like, what is? Go ahead and take that win for a free-to-play game.
What's interesting is that Fallout 76 continues to chug along, and Bethesda's not going to let it die. I mean, they keep on coming up with new content that they're subtly putting into the game.
Seeing all of the Fallout 76 news at E3.
Well, Well, no, I mean, there's more like I get constant updates about what they're doing and what they're updating. And, you know, there are people who want Fallout 76 to work, you know?
I definitely know some hardcore players that are like, this could be better, and I want to see it be better.
I mean, it's the same mentality that's with Darkfall, you know, and it's split up into two Darkfalls after the developer just sold the game to two individual fan developers. So you have two different versions of Darkfall out there as an MMO that they're working on right now. I mean, here's the thing. Fallout 76 as a concept is fine. You know, you're an open world. Fallout 76 is just you and other players, and that's it. You know, that's a fine concept. It's just that A, was rushed, and B, they half-assed it. You know, so Fallout 76 can work. I mean, let's talk about Rainbow Six Siege. I mean, the first year was rough.
Uh-huh.
You know. It was rough, but, you know, people enjoyed it and stuck with it, and it finally became the game they wanted it. It's just a matter of the developers or the publisher giving a shit and saying, yeah, we're going to make this work. Because Ubisoft...
Yeah, I
mean... Ubisoft desperately wanted Rainbow Six Siege to be an esports game. And they were going to go through hell and high water to make sure that game worked. Also, it's a Tom Clancy license, and they don't want to damage the brand.
And, like, talk about a game that started as what was basically a proof of concept and worked its way into, like, a meaningful, good, solid game. That is what Rainbow Six Siege basically did.
And, you know, I think the success of Splitgate will be more in the imitators than it is in the game itself. Because, you know, if people like the concept, you're going to see a crap ton of, you know, first-person shooter with Portal elements in it. You know, I mean, that's how Fortnite got big. You know, Fortnite originally was just a co-op game, you know, and they said, wait a minute, this Battle Royale mode actually will make us some money. And now Fortnite is the basis for everything that's going on with Epic. Without Fortnite, there's no Epic's game store. And they're just selling advertising space on Fortnite now. They're monetizing. They're not just monetizing, you know, items. They're selling Fortnite space to advertisers to do events.
Yeah, I mean they did that whole marshmallow concert thing, and that was basically to tell anyone who wants it, like, hey,
this is what we can
if
do.
If you're important, you can advertise in our game. You can like do your jam in our game, and it'll be good for you. It'll be good for us. It'll be good for everybody.
By the way, the new Call of Duty Modern Warfare trailer aired tonight. Did you see it?
I have not yet.
Okay.
However, I know things that made me, like, roll my eyes a little bit.
I mean, the thing I think they're going with the new Modern Warfare is just going to kick ass with graphics alone. Because it does look gorgeous. And, you know, anytime a trailer says, everything you see in this is actual gameplay, you know that they're going to try and wow you with the graphics. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're gonna go to listener feedback. Take it away, TJ.
Hi guys. Sorry for not leaving a comment on the last episodes. The one you read in this episode was months ago. I was very, very busy last week with business stuff and some personal issues. Anyways, thanks as always for the episodes and your effort you're putting into each episode. I respect that very much. Regarding the topics in the episode, I did not play Civ 6 since I think Civ 3. The game is good, but it is taking so much time. Sadly, I don't have that much time.
Oh, wait.
I played
Hey, Scott. Would you say Civ 3 is... I think... Would you say Civ 3 is better than Civ 4? Scott? Unless Scott is sleeping now.
No, I was on mute. I'm sorry. I was on mute. No, I don't think Civ 3 is better than Civ 4. I enjoyed Civ 4 much more. I think it was a polished Civ 3. It just everything was better in Civ 4. The graphics, the interface, balance issues. You don't have to worry about saltpeter, gunpowder, and the core. So yeah,
actually, I like having to worry about those resources because it forced you from being a turtle. Oh shit, the saltpeter's over there. I better get over there if I want any. Oh, mm-hmm. Someone already took it? Well, looks like I have to go to war.
Or you can trade, you know.
Oh, who wants to trade? No, I want it all for myself.
You greedy, greedy person.
No, yeah. I'm just aggressive, and I'm a turtle, but when there's something I want, guess what? You saw me when the Mongols pissed me off in that game, in that yeah. multiplayer game. I just went, okay, Mongols, here I come. I forget the rest of you. I'm gonna concentrate all my effort on just smacking down the Mongols until they cry.
Oh, that's how we played that game. We'd have everybody pick a AI to attack.
No, that's not how I played. I wanted a turtle, but the Mongols just decided to capture my settler, and I said, nope, that's it. You're going down now.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Anyways, moving on. Go on, TJ.
I played Life is Strange 2, God of War, the old ones, because I wanted to play through all of them before I play the new one. Overwatch, Borderlands 1, which I'd never played any Borderlands before, Hearthstone, and a lot of Magic the Gathering Arena. If my friends are online, we like to play some Apex or Division 2 as well. I want to start Blood Bowl in the upcoming days because I played the board game 20 years ago. I also pledged for AntStream, the retro streaming platform, which will be live early access on May 28th. I hope this will be good. Did you hear of it? Actually, I haven't heard of it.
I think it's a German thing. I think it's a European thing, not United States.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it either.
What do you think of pledging? What do you think of pledging to video games or PC games in general?
Okay, so if he's saying Kickstarter, I don't kickstart many PC video games anymore. I think the last one I did was Mighty No. 9. Oh no, it was Yooka-Laylee.
I think crowdfunding is a fine concept, so long as the publisher in question or developer in question is able to carry through their vision and manage their funds and bring about a good game. And there have been some successful crowdfunded games.
I think it's the opposite for me in particular. Like, I've always believed that all of the risk for crowdfunded games is on the person that's investing in it. Like, of course you should in a honest world, a developer should be good enough to back up their promise. But at the same time, I feel like,
well, here's
you
the thing,
and us as the investor,
here's the
should
thing,
be enough to know when we see a bad deal.
Here's the thing with board games. When you're backing a board game on Kickstarter, you can generally it's going to happen because with board games, usually they already have a proof of concept. They've already had a mock version, and all they're doing the Kickstarter for is to send it off to for production, for manufacturing. With video games, I think too many of them start their Kickstarter just beyond the not even at the alpha stage, just at the concept stage. And here's a little dirty little fact. A lot of video games that get started get dropped like a few months later. Like Sid right. Meier, he's had a lot of game concepts that after 3 months he said, nah, it's not fun. I remember Sid Meier's Dinosaurs was one of those games, and when she said, nah, it's not working, forget it. But when you're crowdfunded, you're locked into that project, come hell or high water, and you cannot stop. You have to continue on, even though you start realizing this game is going to be shit.
I think one of the issues – okay, so like I'm going to go into a little bit of politics here, but not too much. I think one of the issues with open source crowdfunding in a capitalist environment is that we spend money on something with the expectation that we will receive something in return. And that is not how crowdfunding works. When you pledge money to a crowdfunded game, you're investing in something that could or could not return something. You're not buying it. You're investing in it.
And even if it does return,
well, I mean,
it might not
Kickstarter says
be,
this is not a pre-order service.
Yeah, it's not a storefront. It is an investment. And even when you get something, it may not be the thing. It may not be completely the thing you initially invested in. Even with Pillars of Eternity, there were things that changed and evolved and didn't quite come out the way that they originally thought they were going to do it. So even, you know, that can be a change. So you've really, you're not just buying a game from the thing. You're investing for this company to try to produce a game that's going to try to be the spirit of what their intention is, but it might not be. The execution might change.
I mean, even Tim Schafer, you know, when he did, his first game, he had to split it in two parts and still had to raise money with Steam Early Access, and that got a lot of people pissed off. You know, I think he's done better. I mean, Psychonauts 2 is chugging along, so at least there's that. I will say, though, In Exile is an expert at doing crowdfunding. I mean, they got their shit out, and they did it well. I think it's because they did it the proper way, in which they had more than just a concept. They actually had the game at least partly built before they started saying, hey, we want to be a part of this. So, I mean, Wasteland 2, Wasteland 3 is coming along, Bard's Tale 4, that sort of stuff. Anyway, moving along.
Alrighty. Did you hear of...
Regarding the Apex update.
Regarding the Apex update, the Havoc is only playable with the turbocharger. Without that, it is absolutely unplayable. I would agree with that. That said, for fun, I recently took the Select Fire Receiver that turns it into a sniper rifle and just started killing people with it just to prove I could. That's the fun of Apex Legends. It's one of those games where you can just sort of challenge yourself to do things that are absolutely not the most efficient way of doing them, but whatever, just do it because.
Well, it's going to be interesting to be at EA Play because they're probably going to talk about Titanfall there.
That, or they just announced a new challenge for the game and the second season battle pass. So
they already announced that's going to be something that's going to be there. It's part of their itinerary, but I'm thinking about stuff that might be a surprise at EA Play.
I don't know if I expect Titanfall, just because of how much they've been talking it back, pushing it backwards, what with the Star Wars game and their focus on, there are Apex Legends tournaments that are getting ready now, so I feel like they kind of got to keep themselves focused on what they have at hand.
Are you looking forward to the Respawn Star Wars game?
You know, I don't know yet. I kind of need to see more.
Well, it's Respawn, though.
I know
what they're doing.
They've absolutely earned enough trust for me to be confident that they're going to probably do something right. I just am not sure what I expect of it yet. But did you hear of Splitgate? Of course we did. We've been talking about it for a little bit. This seems to be a new arena shooter which combines Halo and Portal. It's free on Steam at the moment. Regarding backwards compatibility on PS5, this would be awesome. I would pay very much for a PS5 which plays PS1, 2, 3, and 4 games. Along with PS5, of course.
No, I think it's just going to play PS4 games.
Yeah, I would believe that too. The only problem would be the chip for PS3 AFIC. I don't think it's going to play PS1 and PS2 games. I think what they're going to do is what they're doing now with PlayStation Now, where they have the library that you can stream to the you buy the service and you can stream the games.
By the way, AFIC is as far as I know. Just so you know.
Okay. Red Dead Online. I only see the promotions advertisements all the time on Twitch, but have no intention to play it.
I really ought to start playing it because I do have Red Dead Redemption 2 and I've just been sitting around.
I have it too. And I can't build up the inner hype enough to actually turn on Red Dead Redemption 2 and go into
online. Having memories of Grand Theft Auto Online and how awful that is.
No, and it's not even like that. I haven't enjoyed Red Dead Online before. I used to enjoy playing the first Red Dead Online. I just don't care. There's too many other games to play.
Yeah, I got Octopath to finish. And you should finish that too, TJ. Come on.
I know. There's too many games. There is too many games.
I know.
I just can't wait until you have Burnout, TJ.
That's, I just I've had put out a patch
three times in the past 20 years.
wow, at World of Warcraft, I really loved this game and loved it in the beginning and still love it. Problem is that my friends are not playing it anymore. Playing an MMORPG on your own is not that fun. Absolutely not. I played the last expansion as far as possible without a raid or group, and it was a great pain. I listen to the music very often and would like to see the cutscenes and updates. For sure, the vanilla version was harder in my opinion, but that was great. 40 people in a raid defeating Ragnaros for the first time. What an amazing feeling. So much emotions. Better than the first time. First question of the week.
I am actually interested in World of Warcraft Vanilla, or World of Warcraft Classic. Because I'm going to tell you, the way they redesigned World of Warcraft, I despise it. I really wish I had my trees back, in which I could actually make a build based on the trees. And, you know, I don't care if people do the same trees over and over. That's not me. I might do a different build than other people because I want to do it my way. You know?
That's a fact. The customization is kind of what made that game super fun. But yeah, I'm completely with you. If it doesn't have like the options to like put stats and the abilities that I actually want, then like why what am I here for? For you to play the game for me, World of Warcraft? Because that's not what I want.
Oh, by the way, I saw a video on that was about the revival of City of Heroes, and they have so much more skills this time around. I don't remember the last time I played City of Heroes, but I didn't remember having that. This version of it really breaks everything down and micromanages the abilities. And by that, I mean each skill has various skills that are based on various skills that are based on various skills. So you can really fine tune. Here's the thing. I think the people who are doing City of Heroes, and maybe they're fans, I don't know. They're probably fans. Know what really made City of Heroes magic for a lot of people. And that was the customization. Remember, Paragon Cities, I remember every week, I think it was on a Wednesday, there would be like 30 people lined up for a fashion show. You know? It was that kind of game because it had that kind of customability in the costumes. So they're really making it so that you can create your own special. I have to send you the link, DJ, just to show you the sheer number of skills that are available to you. And the breakdown of each skill. It is just like, wow. I remember being a controller who could fly. And I think I was something having to do with cosmics, right? Cosmic or magic, something like that. And now it's sort of like, what kind of magic? What kind of cosmic? And if that kind of magic, what kind of abilities in that magic? And by the way, for these specific abilities, you can have this kind of differentiation among those. You know, it really does the minutia. And for a game like City of Heroes, that kind of micromanagement is welcome because you want to make your hero, so that there isn't trillions and quadrillions of combinations. No, they want a Googleplex of combinations so that it is almost impossible, unless you deliberately make it so, to have two heroes that are alike.
Mm-hmm. That is cool.
Yeah. Anyway, first question of the week.
For the first question of the week, the last game which has been released and I did not notice was Hollow Knight. I noticed it 1 year or two later, and it was so awesome that I was wondering I did not notice it when it came out. Hollow Knight is so good. It's, like, one of the best platformers ever. Like, even among the ones that are coming out now and the ones that have come out before, Hollow Knight is ridiculously good.
Have you played A Hat in Time?
I have not.
Okay, because people rave about that game, too.
Yeah. I've watched it. It's really charming. It's
Scott,
really
have you
cute.
Played A Hat in Time?
I've seen it on Game Grumps. I thought it was kind of a little bit cheesy, I guess.
Well, it's intentionally cheesy.
Yeah. But I haven't played it, no.
Okay.
Second question of the week. I think the game I will still play in 20 years and will not age is Magic the Gathering. But it's a card game, so I don't know if this is a real game regarding your question. See, that's an interesting thing, because
Magic the Gathering is an evolving game. It's even in the physical form, it's an evolving game where like they come out with new rule sets where like you can't use old decks or use certain cards that were.
Well, no, that's only for tournament play. I mean, obviously. I mean,
but obviously, if you like, put
I started playing it at the very beginning in 1995, you know, and I stopped at around, I don't know, 2000, and not because I couldn't afford booster packs. You know, that's the best part of Magic is opening those booster packs. You know, but the reason is that people just got it down too much to a science, you know.
It's, yeah.
Here's Larry Niven's, you know, the Millstone deck, the Land Destruction deck, that's or the Mana Burn deck, you know.
I made a poison deck.
And I would just, if I ever play Magic, it's strictly draft. You know, you got to think on your feet. That's it.
Yeah. If I had to pick a second game, it would be something like World of Warcraft. I started playing in 2004. That was already 15 years ago. Or one of the so-called retro games like Musha Lesti or Mushihima Sama. I had to actually think about saying that before. yeah, Bullet Hell Shooters for the 16 and 32-bit consoles. I mean, I still love to play them today.
I play Ikaruga. Even though I suck at it, I still have fun. But I started World of Warcraft when, as a matter of fact, I was there when World of Warcraft made its debut in 2002 at E3. And I could tell, oh my god, that Tauren, I learned later it was a Tauren, it's the character design made you want to play so badly.
Mm-hmm.
It just had that perfection, and I was one of the launch people. And I remember being one of about 100 people in the same stupid starting area. Everybody killing wolves. It's like you had to wait for people to clear before you could find a wolf for yourself to kill. Was it a wolf at the time? I know it's a wolf now. Oh, I don't remember. I just remember having to, you know, go to the mine and having to wait for my chance to kill a kobolds just so I could get the the credit. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I want to play vanilla WoW. I despise the new WoW. Anyway.
I can get down. I can still get down on Raiden, which was like the old school shoot 'em up. I love that game. I love that series. Raiden was always really good. That's all for this one. Sorry for this big and long one. I hope that's okay. When I will be in the U.S. next time, I'll invite you guys to dinner and thank you for all your work you put into this podcast.
It's going
to
be kind of tough since we live in three different areas of the United States.
We live in three corners.
Not quite. I mean, you live in Texas. Scott lives in Florida, and I live in New York, so.
Yeah, it's pretty far apart.
Anyways, that was Ralph from Germany.
Thank you, Ralph.
Nice to hear from you, Ralph.
Our one listener. Well, that's not true. I mean, there's other listeners. They just don't take the time to write in. But, you know, here's the thing. If you write in, we'll read it because there's no other listeners writing in. So if you want to hear one of your letters read out loud, we're definitely going to read it.
And we'll absolutely, like, discuss that stuff like we just did with this.
Yes.
Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we definitely will see you next week, and hopefully the sound is fine on this episode.
For sure.
Hope the sound is good, and happy gaming, everyone.
By the way, have you guys been dealing with – we're getting flash flood warnings here in New York with the rain. Is it raining elsewhere?
Yeah, it rained here in Florida. That's what Florida is. I don't think it rained today, but it has been raining.
I'm just wondering because we – here's the thing. Living in L.A., I miss having, you know, thunder and lightning and thunderstorms.
When I was in Houston a couple weeks ago for Texas Showdown, there was actually – thunderstorms. Houston had a flash flood the weekend that I was there.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I was on high ground, but like, yeah.
You know where it would be? You know where I'd love to be, which would be the scariest place for a thunderstorm, would be on a Texas highway. You know, in one of the really flat lands, so that, you know, it's like a flat as a griddle cake. So you feel like there's no place you could hide. Like, oh my God. I'm the tallest thing in a mile.
Yeah. That's all of West Texas, except for, like, oil fields.
I was just saying, that's where I would love to be, because you could see the lightning a lot clearer, because there's no hills, no buildings. You just see that jagged line going down to the ground and thinking, you know, I better watch out, because there's a very real chance that I will be the grounding point for that lightning coming up. I will be a lightning rod. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.